When we think back through the history of how women vote, we tend to think of huge moments that affected turnout at the polls. Here's a quick look back. Women were granted the right to vote in 1920. During World War II, for the first time, women streamed into the workforce in large numbers, and Representative Jeanette Rankin from Montana cast Congress's only vote against entry into the war after the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor.
Although ladies rarely celebrate birthdays, these young ladies are justly proud on May 14, 1943, the first anniversary of the founding of the Women's Army Auxiliary Corps. It hasn't been an easy year for the woman soldier. Despite efficient accomplishment of her duties, sideline quarterbacks have taken pot shots at her from every angle.
There's something happening here.
In the 1960s and 70s, American women took part in the counterculture movement, and hundreds of thousands waited for their husbands and sons to come home from Vietnam.
We have adopted a plan for the complete withdrawal of all U.S. combat ground forces and their replacement by South Vietnamese forces on an orderly, scheduled timetable.
Fifty years after being granted the right to vote, feminists marched in the streets to celebrate the occasion. Then on January 22, 1973, the Roe v. Wade decision was announced.
The Supreme Court today ruled that abortion is completely a private matter to be decided by mother and doctor in the first 3 months of pregnancy.
And in the 1980s, President Ronald Reagan pledged to overturn that decision.
10 years ago today, the Supreme Court overturned the state laws protecting the lives of the unborn. Heated debate on abortion has raged ever since. On one hand, there is the argument that a woman should have control over her own person. On the other hand, there is the argument that another life is involved here, the unborn child. That's the belief which has drawn many here to Washington today, to march and to pray. I, too, have always believed that God's greatest gift is human life, and that we have a duty to protect the life of an unborn child.
Today, women turn out to vote in higher percentages than men, and they vote disproportionately for the Democratic ticket. In the 2012 presidential election, as you've been hearing all week, issues like women's health and access to contraception have risen to the forefront. We're joined this morning by Virginia Sapiro. She's a dean of arts and sciences at Boston University, and for many years she taught political science and women's studies at the University of Wisconsin in Madison. Good morning, Virginia.
Hello. It's good to talk to you.
We'll get to the history in a minute, but I want to start with the present day because there is so much happening right now. We've all heard these charges that some of the cuts to funding for Planned Parenthood, the restrictions on abortion, amount to a war on women. And I know some people believe that to be the case, while others think this is just shameless politicking. But from your point of view, as a student of history and a professor of history, where does this year stand in terms of the importance of the women's vote?
Well, those are all different questions. One is about the structure of the campaigns and the so-called war on women, where people really mean that those issues of contraception and abortion and so forth are very much in the news, and I'm sure we'll talk about that. As far as the women's vote goes and their difference from men, the major issues that drive citizens' votes, men or women, is the economy, their perception of jobs, their perception of their life chances of having a good life. I think there's some very particular reasons why, especially recent discussions of abortion, may push politics around a little bit more than usual. But basically, where we have to start is that men and women tend to vote about much the same things, but they have slightly different reactions.
Tell me a little bit about the difference in those reactions that you see between the way women vote and the way men vote. What are some of the issues on which they divide?
Sure. Well, really, before we talk about the issues, we have to talk about their partisanship and their relationship to the two major political parties. As many of the listeners probably know, for a very long time now, women have tended to vote a little bit more Democratic than men, and men have voted a little more Republican than women. The question really is why? What has caused that difference in the base between the two groups of people? A lot of this happened in the 1970s and 1980s. In the beginning of your show, there was some discussion of going way back to the 1920s.
Mm-hmm.
But right now, we're looking at a phenomenon that has to do with the 1980s. And that was about the time when what had been a majority Democratic citizenry here across, men and women, began to change. So the Republican Party gained a lot of ground, and most particularly the Democrats lost ground among citizens in the United States. The real thing that happened at that point was that the Democrats lost ground among men more than they lost ground among women. So when we talk about women's votes, we can't just think, oh, those women are the ones who were fickle and changed and we got to watch them.
Okay.
We have to ask about men. And really what happened there is the women stayed a little bit more solidly in the Democratic Party. So why? Well, if you go back to the Ronald Reagan election, he was really very brilliantly began to complete a process that had been occurring already. The Democrats had very much lost ground in the South.
Mm-hmm.
The Democratic Party was solid in the South. And among white Americans in the South, people started going much more toward the Republican Party. Well, that was very much because of race politics, where the Democratic Party lost hold among whites there because of the change in race politics. The when Reagan ran for president, he did two things that really captured many more men. One of them is he talked a lot about affirmative action and the policies and how they were making it so that black people and women were getting these jobs because of the government and not because they earned it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, men were a little bit more convinced than women were that was a reasonable argument.
Interesting.
But the second thing that was really very important was social policy and tax and spend, the kind of thing we've listened to a lot. And there, again, men were a little bit more convinced by that than women. So since then, women have really been much more part of the Democratic base, and that's where we have to start.
Virginia, I want to play a piece of tape for you here. This is a young woman named Callie Pioli who joined us on The Takeaway yesterday. Now, Callie was a Republican. She was a registered Republican. But after the comments made by Missouri Representative Todd Akin about legitimate rape and women not getting pregnant if a rape is legitimate, she's decided to switch her mind. She's changing parties. Listen to Callie.
The recent comments made by Akins are unfortunately one in a long chain. This has been a season of attacks on Planned Parenthood, the introduction of state-sanctioned rape laws, those very invasive abortion laws. So it definitely seems to be a pattern of disrespecting and diminishing women's issues, and it's very hard to ignore as a woman.
So, Virginia, you say throughout the past maybe 20 or 30 years, Republicans have had a harder time capturing the women's vote. Some of that is about social issues, to be sure. What has the Republican Party learned, in your opinion, over the last 30 years about trying to make up some of that ground? And is this election taking them back a step?
Well, I'm glad you put it that way, because for quite a while it seemed like they were really learning something. A lot of women leaders inside the Republican Party about 20 years ago said, hey, look, guys, we have to do something here because we're losing the women. And so a lot of the candidates started to try to appeal to women more. This year they seem to have forgotten that, and in spades. So what your caller said about this pattern, I think, is something a lot of women are picking up. And it's not just a difference of opinion about abortion, but it's the vehemence and the radical kind of position that a lot of women are perceiving of, no exception for rape in abortion. And it's not just Todd Akin who said that, but when the vice presidential candidate has said that, and when the Republican platform has taken such a radical stance, that is scaring off a lot of marginal Republican women and independents.
But are these issues important enough? I mean, you talked before about the economy being, of course, something that women care very, very deeply about. And I wonder, well, I wonder two things. You know, we talked a little bit earlier this morning, we played a cut of tape from the Second World War. That was the time when women entered the workforce in droves for the first time. And I wonder, women's relationship to the economy as a voting issue, is something that they are going to vote yes or no on for X candidate or Y candidate. Does that go back to the Second World War when for the first time they were earning money? And let's bring that up to today, the economic position of women.
Yes, well, it's still going to be the economy. The problem is we're all confused about exactly where we are in this economy and who's going to help the solution. 4 years ago, the now President Obama was able to say, look, my predecessor drove the economy down and I'm going to come in and save it. And so people supported him. You have a lot of confusion now because, after all, the economy might not be as bad as it would have been. It might have improved somewhat, but for a lot of people, it's still really scary. It's still really bad, and that's what Romney's playing on. So how do people who don't know a lot about the economy sort out these two candidates? Then they turn around, a lot of these women, and find, wow, there's something else here that's really clear. And what's really clear is we don't have moderate differences on things like abortion and contraception and so forth. We have some radical differences. And so it could be that this year there's been such a pattern, and it's been such a strong pattern that, as I say, it's not going to be all women, but those women who really are looking and saying which way to go, they're going to be pushed by I think, the recent discussions of abortion.
You know, a couple of our guests have pointed out this week that we keep using the term women's issues, but frankly, these things affect men as well in a very big way. I wonder, though, when men go out to the polls, when men listen to politicians talk and then vote on election day, do these things typically tend to enter their minds, or does that get sort of sidelined as something the women have to think about, but not something that I stand or fall on?
Yes, well, it's one of the reasons I never actually use the term women's issues, because all of the issues that affect women also affect men, but differently, and they might be interested to different degrees. So I think what's interesting is in most elections, women and men, their views on abortion are roughly the same overall. They're about as likely to vote on abortion, which is you have a few single-issue people on both sides, but the vast majority of people don't vote on abortion. I think one of the reasons this year that might change is not necessarily that some of the women are voting on abortion per se. It's, as your speaker said yesterday, it's what it represents in this pattern of a feeling a number of women have that, oh, wow, they keep kind of attacking us. They keep trying to take away a number of rights. What's this going to look like?
And we sometimes talk about women, I think, in this country as if they're a monolith, you know, as if they all vote together, as if they all think the same way. And I wonder, you know, looking back to the suffrage movement in the, you know, the early 19-teens, women didn't overwhelmingly support women in that, did they? So there are divisions here between what women are willing to support when it comes to issues that affect them.
No, the basic rule of understanding women and men is women are as diverse as men are. Mm-hmm. Their opinions are as various. They live in as variety a number of places. They're rich, they're poor, all of that just like men. So the differences between men and women have been marginal, but they're marginal around the 50% mark. And so when you get a year like this where perhaps there will be some issues that drive a little bit more wedge between men and women, that's going to make a very large difference because it will be around the 50% mark. And so women are supporting Democrats as usual more than men are, but that gap may be a little larger than usual.
Well, I expect this conversation isn't going anywhere anytime soon. Virginia Sapiro is a Dean of Arts and Sciences at Boston University. Virginia, thanks so much. This was really insightful. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks. It was a pleasure.